Earlier this month, the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to Peter Higgs and François Englert for their work on the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson, which they had predicted in 1964 but was only shown to exist by the Large Hadron Collider in Europe this very year. The Higgs boson may raise more questions than it answers. That's a problem. There are also other huge questions that physicists are still racking their brains over. Scientific American Associate Editor Clara Moskowitz surveys some of those questions in 5 Unanswered Questions That Will Keep Physicists Awake at Night, an essay that's online now at Scientific American's website. And I'm very pleased that it brings Clara Moskowitz to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
There's a famous photograph of a 1927 conference with Einstein, Curie, Schrödinger, Heisenberg, Bohr, and many other titans of physics from what has been called the golden age of physics. Was there a feeling at that time that most of the great questions in physics had already been answered?
One of the things about physics is that every time you answer a question, it usually just opens up plenty more questions. So even then, everything that they answer just raised the bar. I think Einstein died knowing there were many big questions out there.
Well, some people probably think that the questions keeping physicists awake should include practical things like, is the Earth going to be destroyed by an asteroid? Are the questions that you're covering practical or mostly theoretical?
These are the fundamental theoretical questions about the nature of the universe. So, no, they're not exactly practical, yet a lot of the most practical devices we rely on, GPS and our cell phones, come from things like general relativity that was purely about the nature of light, you know?
So the theory then winds up, people wind up finding practical uses for the theory.
Exactly. You never know what dark matter is going to be used for down the line.
One can only hope that it'll be something good. The biggest of your 5 problems, or at least it sounds like the biggest, is what will be the fate of our universe? What's the issue here? Won't the universe go on forever?
Well, the question is, in what form, you know, and not necessarily. So there's 3 big possibilities that are discussed, and they each have a pretty scary name. There's the Big Rip, the Big Crunch, and the Big Freeze. So we're probably looking at one of those options, and none of them are too appealing.
And wait, so let's go through each of them. The Big Rip?
Right. So the Big Rip is the fate of the universe really depends on something we call dark energy, and that's whatever is causing the expansion of the universe to accelerate. They don't know what it is, and they don't know if it's going to become greater or less or stay constant.
So, or whether it'll slow down. We assumed in the past that it was slowing down until we found out that it wasn't.
Exactly, and we don't know, you know, if it's going to keep accelerating or if it's going to slow down again. So basically, the Big Rip is what's going to happen if dark energy increases over time. So not only does the space between galaxies expand, but the space within galaxies expands so that galaxies themselves are pulled apart. They're just ripped apart and, you know, nothing would be left.
But they could also just keep on expanding, couldn't they?
That's right. So the Big Freeze is what they call it. If dark energy stays about constant, then the space between galaxies is just going to stretch and stretch and stretch until one day you look out and you see nothing in the universe. It's just this dark wasteland.
Alpha Centauri will be really far away, not just far away.
Right. Well, that's in our galaxy, so we may still see that.
Is it important to know how the universe began to answer some of these questions?
It is. You know, it's all related because we just don't know what role dark energy played in the early universe as well. That leads us to another, you know, big mystery, which is, why are we even here in the universe?
Do physicists ask what existed before the Big Bang?
They do, but it's a really hard question to answer.
Because nobody witnessed it.
And nothing survived, we don't think. I mean, we have some signs from really early in the universe. It's kind of amazing just how far we can look back, but nothing knows what prompted the Big Bang or if there was anything before.
Well, we had Arno Penzias on our show once, and he's the one who actually confirmed the Big Bang's existence, but he heard the echo of the Big Bang.
That's right. They call this the cosmic microwave background radiation. It's the oldest light in the universe, and it's pervading space. And actually, little variations in this light can tell us a lot about maybe how the Big Bang happened and what happened right afterwards.
What are the problems with the Higgs boson? Wasn't finding it heralded as an answer to a lot of big questions?
It was, and it was one of those perfect illustrations of the nature of physics. You find something, and it just raises all these new questions. And now they're asking, well, is it the only Higgs boson? And why is it the kind of particle that we see? Why does it have the properties it does? It's very confusing, actually.
Well, it was predicted by the math before it ever was found.
Exactly, but the particulars were not predicted, such as its mass and other characteristics. So that's what we're dealing with now, is trying to understand why does it have the mass that it does, and what does that mean about the nature of the zoo of particles that make up our universe?
Well, is it a sure thing that we actually found the Higgs boson? Could it have been something else?
It very, very closely fits everything that was predicted for the Higgs boson. So they're pretty sure it's a Higgs boson. The question is it the Higgs boson? Are there cousins? Are there different kinds of Higgs bosons? They don't know.
If it hadn't been found, what would have been the implications for our understanding of the universe? Would we just be still looking for it, or would we have to say at some point, well, maybe we've been looking in the wrong way, in the wrong place?
It's definitely a possibility. It would be one of those going back to the drawing board situations. And finding the Higgs boson solved a big question about how other particles get their mass. Now, at least, we feel like we have a basic understanding of how particles get mass. Otherwise, they could all be massless, and they really should, unless you have the Higgs boson that answers that question.
Well, one of the issues you don't deal with is string theory. Would the Higgs boson work with string theory?
It certainly could. It doesn't really provide any evidence for it, but there's a lot of models of string theory that could accommodate the Higgs boson. String theory is one of those deeper theories. So physics works on layers. You know, we're working on one surface layer right now, but a lot of people think there's something deeper underlying that theory that explains some of the questions it leaves out.
Well, the reason that they even came up with string theory was they wanted to reconcile Einstein with quantum mechanics. And that's the only thing that seems to work, but to many people it just seems kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And messy, too.
It is. It's a neat idea that all the little particles in the universe are really these vibrating strings. I think that's why it's caught on. And it does answer a lot of questions, but, you know, it doesn't answer all the questions, and it's really hard to tell if it's right or wrong.
My guest is Clara Moskowitz. Her article, 5 Unanswered Questions That Will Keep Physicists Awake at Night, is online at Scientific American. Some of these questions seem philosophical. For example, why is the universe so exquisitely balanced such that life can exist? Is that a question of physics or biology?
Yeah, or philosophy. It really intersects, you know. But sometimes we look at the evidence that physics gives us, and it really does raise these philosophical existential questions, because one thing we're seeing is that the universe is so perfectly fine-tuned for life to exist that the values of the fundamental constants are perfect. They're exactly what we need. And in fact, the strength of dark energy just after the universe was born is perfect to form galaxies and stars and planets and life. And if it wasn't the exact strength that it was, none of those things would be here.
Well, would the conditions have to be similar to Earth, or can't life exist in a surprising range of conditions?
Well, another big question. We don't know, but it's true that, you know, a lot of different planets might be able to accommodate life, but all of them need dark energy to be a very specific value.
Could the universe have been different so that life could not exist?
It's possible, yes, because it's definitely could have really easily happened that no stars and galaxies and planets formed at all.
Craig Venter was on our show recently to talk about synthetic biology, which is prompting questions about what life is. What do physicists make of the possible philosophical issues in these kinds of scientific questions?
I think they like to grapple with them and dive right in. I think that physicists are really concerned with the most fundamental questions we can think of, and those include philosophical questions.
But there seems to be a war between at least some philosophers and some scientists who each feel that the other one is impinging on their territory.
That's true.
Some of the questions sound very technical. Where do astrophysical neutrinos come from? what are actual physical neutrinos?
It's true.
I'm still just getting by on a kind of understanding the Higgs boson.
I hear you, but this question actually is the entire field of research for many a scientist who has devoted their life to answering this question. And it's just one more wrinkle in this funny universe. So astrophysical neutrinos are these really high-energy particles. Neutrinos themselves are fundamental particles. They're pretty similar to electrons, but they have no charge, and they probably pass through our bodies all the time without interacting with any of our atoms. So they're really funny, and we think there are some that are really high-energy that come from these collisions out in space between cosmic rays and this cosmic microwave background radiation from the Big Bang that we've talked about earlier.
And apparently two ultra-high-energy neutrinos were captured by the Ice Cube experiment in just the last couple of years. What was the Ice Cube experiment?
Yeah, it's this neat detector down at the South Pole that is looking for these neutrinos. And like I said, it's really hard to find neutrinos because they pass through almost all matter without interacting. But occasionally they will hit matter, and you can measure them and how much energy they have and try to answer the question about where they're coming from.
And how do you know that it's a neutrino and not one of the other Higgs bosons that we don't know about?
Yeah, that's what those scientists spend almost all their time doing, is trying to discriminate against other particles, trying to shield everything else out and recognize the signature and the patterns created by the specific particle they're looking for.
Why are these ultra-high energy particles of interest?
Because they really might come from some of these strange, really powerful processes out in the universe that we're trying to understand better. They call them active galactic nuclei. They're the center of galaxies where you have a supermassive black hole that's in this feeding frenzy, gobbling up tons of matter. And when it does that, really violent processes occur. It's like a big, large hadron collider out in space that's accelerating particles.
And we still don't know how black holes work. I read recently of a big debate within the scientific community as to what happens on the edge of a black hole, whether everything is crushed immediately or things have to go into the black hole before they're crushed, things like that.
Yeah, we are living in a really exciting time, honestly.
This is exciting. I want the
really
answers.
It's really exciting. It's called...
I want to know what happens if I'm caught in a black hole, whether I'm going to be crushed immediately or I'm going to have to wait a little while.
Well, you're definitely going to die either way, so don't worry too hard.
But we now know that there are black holes at the center of pretty much every universe?
Every galaxy.
Every galaxy, I mean?
Yes, they feel pretty strongly about that, but we can't see them very well. They're extremely hard to study. And we're trying to watch what happens when matter falls into them. And our own Milky Way actually is going to offer a rare chance to do this really soon, probably the end of this year or early next year. This big gas cloud is headed to collide with our own Milky Way's black hole, and we might be able to see what happens.
Well, if we have this black hole in the center of our galaxy, why aren't we all being pulled into it?
A black hole basically acts gravitationally just like anything else if you're a given distance away. So it doesn't exert any more gravitational force on us this far away from it than anything else. It's just that it's really dense. It's that you have all this mass condensed into a really small area. That's the special thing with black holes.
The last question you address is, how come the universe is made of matter and not antimatter? Was the universe always composed of matter, or was there a lot more antimatter at some point in the past?
Amazingly, they think there actually used to be just as much antimatter as matter. Just after the Big Bang, there was equal parts of both. But when matter meets its antimatter partner particle, the two annihilate each other. They explode. And they think that most of the matter and most of the antimatter in the early universe destroyed each other, leaving just this small surplus of matter that became the universe we know.
But we don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure, and we don't know why matter won out. Why did antimatter lose this big tug of war?
These questions were originally posed to particle physicists at a meeting over the summer. Would astrophysicists or biophysicists or others come up with different questions?
Definitely. And I picked five of the most intriguing ones to me, but you might want to check out the whole list on Symmetry Magazine. They have about 20 great questions, and those are just from particle physicists.
Donald Rumsfeld cryptically once said, "There are known unknowns. There are things that we know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things that we do not know we don't know." Do physicists have a sense of how much they don't know?
I think so. I think that a lot of the big changes in the past 100 years, say, of physics have taught physicists that anything could change at any moment, that anything we believe and hold true could be rewritten. And that's why I think it's so exciting.
Well, is it possible that some questions can't be answered, that we haven't the technology, the scientific understanding, or the mathematics that would be necessary to understand them?
It is possible. And I think some people are questioning whether we're going to get answers to certain questions like dark energy. Maybe we're just not going to know.
And because we really will not come in contact with it or not be able to measure it. But also, I wonder if the human mind might not be incapable of understanding some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get back to religion and philosophy. Maybe we're not meant to know, see how the sausage is made of the universe.
And then there are the very unphilosophical questions like, how much would the next step after the Large Hadron Collider cost? Are some of these big questions in physics just too expensive to answer?
That's true. That the Large Hadron Collider was this amazing collaboration between countries all over the world. And can we really afford another big project like that? The United States had a similar project plan that was canceled. And a lot of people think maybe the United States isn't really up for big fundamental projects like that on such a grand scale anymore.
It was just because nobody wanted to come up with the money? Europe, it was put together by a number of nations.
That's right. And we were asking for other nations to contribute, but the cost kept overrunning the schedule, the budget. It was just too big of a headache. There was a lot of issues with that project, but budget was the big one.
Well, would it be necessary to come up with a larger collider?
Yeah, because the bigger the collider, the faster the particles can spin inside of it, and the faster they're going when they hit each other, the greater energy their explosions have.
And what other particles are we looking for? Didn't we resolve all of that when we found the Higgs boson? Or are we looking for lots of different Higgs bosons?
We are, and we think there are more particles out there. Another big theory is called supersymmetry, and it predicts that there are all of these mirror particles to the ones we already know that we haven't seen yet. And that would answer a lot of questions that we have, but we can't find them.
Mirror particles being different than anti.
Exactly, another kind of mirror particle.
With the synthetic biology work of Craig Venter and others, there's a lot of business interest in possible applications. Do these questions that physicists are asking have any practical implications as well?
They don't immediately, and they almost certainly do eventually. It's one of those things where you don't know what you're going to find, and you don't know what answers it's going to give, but a lot of the technologies we rely on today only came because someone was asking one of those fundamental questions.
Well, we didn't really come up with an answer to whether we could travel faster than the speed of light until fairly recently, even though Einstein had said we couldn't. So there are other reasons that we finally come to these conclusions?
Yeah, I mean, the speed of light is one part of general relativity that we really do believe is a fundamental speed limit law in the universe.
Of course, Newton, we thought he was fundamental, and then he turned out to not be 100% right.
That's right. And as we know, Einstein can't be the whole picture because gravity and quantum mechanics are mutually exclusive. So we need something that can tell us about the very big and the very small at the same time.
You can find a link to Clara Moskowitz's article, What Keeps Physicists Awake at Night, on our show page at WNYC.org. And you said that the more complete list is available where?
Symmetry Magazine, yeah.
People just go to symmetrymagazine.com or .org or something?
.org. I think if you Google Symmetry Magazine, it's a publication by two of the U.S. physics labs, SLAC and Fermilab.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.